I really don't know the answer. So I'll leave that for you to think about. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Coming up at the top of the hour, more of our different programming. I think you'll want to stay tuned. I think you'll be glad that you did. And so you've been listening on 90.7 and other frequencies broadcast across Cascadia on the terrestrial radio and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the film screening of Mother, Daughter, Sister on Saturday, October 13th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Cinema 21 in Portland. Mother, Daughter, Sister exposes the Burmese military's practice of using rape as a weapon of war. Testimonies from survivors, witnesses, and activists explore the far-reaching impact of sexual violence upon women and communities as they call for justice and a unified stand for an end to impunity. A panel discussion will follow the film and includes the filmmaker and local community leaders and activists. Again, that's Mother, Daughter, Sister on Saturday, October 13th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Cinema 21, 616 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted.
This is Cat Meow.
And this is Becky.
And we want to hang out with you.
The Development Committee will meet the third Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m.
We're traffic informed and food motivated. And we're seeking like-minded individuals who want to use their rad fundraising skills and talents to
support the station. Join us.
Join us.
This is Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO Portland, Oregon.
Good morning, Radio Free Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, October 10th, 2018, and you're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. you just cannot put a price on the value of community radio. The very fact that you and I and all of us are participating in this incredibly courageous action. It's especially and under the current regime, is an extraordinary feat of bravery. So thanks everyone for participating in KBOO. And now that said, a little weather to get us through the weekend. For today, sunny skies, highs around 67, and overnight lows 46. Tomorrow, fog reaching its fingers up until the noontime hour, then becoming sunny with a high around 70 and overnight lows 46. The same pattern persists throughout the weekend with the Saturday highs in the low 70s, overnight lows in the high 40s, around 48. For Sunday, same thing. Highs for the daytime around 72 and overnight lows 47. That said, we have some climate news and climate courtroom news, and the results of the necessity defense. The judge's response is very interesting. This whole case has been full of surprises right from the get-go, starting with the, again, talking about courage here, the courage it took, and just the sheer organization. If every action that we take could look like this, we might get somewhere, because these people are brave, they're smart, and they, what they did allowed them to take to court the necessity defense and to play that hand in a calm, cool way, which sets a precedent for other such actions and a likely courtroom strategy. We're going to be speaking now with one of the attorneys. We spoke earlier last week, I believe, on the 3rd, with Ben Jolesois. So we're going to be speaking today with Kelsey, and I want to welcome everyone, all of you, to the airwaves, and we want to get just to get things rolling. If you would like to, I understand that we've got a couple people there. If you'd like to just give us a recap of the action itself and what you did. That would be great. We'll be doing that in just a sec. This is actually October the 11th, the 2016. So this is actually the 11th, and so that means 2 years ago to the day, five dedicated activists, now known as the Valve Turners, symbolically turned off the valves to every pipeline bringing in tar sands oil from Canada, straight out of Alberta. This is the dirtiest type of crude that you could possibly try to stuff down a pipe. Together, these five shut off 15% of the country's most polluting energy supply for part of the day. 15% of the country's oil supply. That's significant. That is significant. They accomplished this feat after extensive research and deliberations by sending one or two activists along with a videographer and support to the border of Washington, Montana, North Dakota, and Minnesota to turn the safety block valves of four tar sands pipelines. In four different states, they simultaneously approached the fenced enclosures with bolt cutters, cut off the chains that locked the fence, and then turned the valves. It's important here to note that the valve turners were very concerned with safety and mitigated any real chance of an accident, other than the fact that they could have been sent to prison for a very long time. They took great care to make sure that no one, all down the line, no one was hurt. And while they took that risk and put their freedom on the line for all of us, I want to make careful note of that, for all of us. Right now we're waiting to hear from, we're going to try Ben Joldersma, and we're going to hear also from Casey Stacks, one of the attorneys on the case, was there in the courtroom when a rather surprising thing took place yesterday. Kelsey Stacks on right now. Good morning, Kelsey. Thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
So I've just done a little bit of a recap of what actually happened. And Val turned his concern for safety of all of the people, all down the line, who might be affected by this action, regardless of the fact that the action itself might land them in jail for prison for quite a while. So why did they decide to do this? What prompted such a decision?
Well, Chris, my understanding is that these three climate activists were motivated by the fact that we are in a climate emergency right now. And not only is the situation very serious with respect to global climate change, but the legal ways of affecting social change and government policy have not been effective. Two of the activists are longtime climate activists who have literally tried everything they could think of and found that it did not work. Knowing their history, they knew that civil disobedience can be a very effective way of opening up space for policy change. And so they determined that that was the only avenue that was available to them.
So on this the subject of the necessity defense, which, as I understand it, allows the activists to demonstrate a number of things. First off, harm to the climate, as you just mentioned, and that there are no reasonable legal alternatives to breaking the law at this point. There's nothing else that one can do to send a message. And the defendants were in danger of imminent physical harm. Ben Gilderman is going to be with us too.
And yeah, I'm here. Hey.
Good morning, Ben. Thanks for being with us. Mm-hmm. Well, welcome back to the KBO Airwaves. So we're talking about the necessity defense and where we stand now. As I understand it, there was a surprise decision the other day. And this is, of course, too, the two-year anniversary. This is October 11th of 2018, and it was on October 11th, as I see from my notes, of 2016 that the Val Turners took the action that they did. So what happened in court?
Well, it was, as you say, quite a surprising decision. In a criminal case, the state or the prosecutor has to prove what the defendant did, and the judge ruled that the state's evidence wasn't even good enough to let the jury consider it. Basically, that no reasonable jury could possibly have found them guilty. So our whole team of lawyers, my organization, Climate Defense Project, partnered with Tim Phillips and with the Civil Liberties Defense Center, and we were all surprised by the decision. And so it's an acquittal. They face no further legal consequences. But the thing is, the charges that these activists faced were inappropriate from the beginning. They were charged under a law that provides for felony consequences for actions around a pipeline. And the fossil fuel industry has been pushing these anti-protest bills through state legislatures across the country. They're mainly designed to intimidate people. Many of them are unconstitutional. and they're profoundly anti-democratic. So what we saw in court yesterday is that this law isn't a good fit for what the activists did, that the fossil fuel industry has overreached, and that perhaps prosecutions that happen under these anti-protest laws may not be successful.
And it's not a good fit for the present conditions. If you have globally learned people who whose field is study of climate and it's some of the extreme evidence that we've seen recent days, weeks, months, and ongoing, as in right now in Florida, we have an emergency that requires, that draws the sluggish interest of FEMA going on. So apparently the media and the American people, this attention is drawn to that catastrophe, piled on the accumulated catastrophes as a result of these storms. The storms themselves are tremendous. The results are tremendous, like nothing we've seen before. But that's taking place quickly. So that draws the attention of media. Meanwhile, the urgency, the catastrophe, is ongoing and present in everyday life, with or without a big storm. This is what's so worrisome, and it was what I think is important. I think to take a hard look at is, why is it part of human nature to, or at least Americans' human nature, to respond to something, a clear and present danger, and be incapable.